Going Linux, Episode 163, Computer America, Number 46. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2012. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And tonight, of course, is our all Linux show. It's all about the topic of Linux. We dedicate the subject of Linux. We do that every third Tuesday of the month. And there are five Tuesdays this month in January, but this is the third Tuesday of the month. And we dedicate it to the topic of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, of course, tonight is the night for you to give us a call and get your questions answered. Joining us in this endeavor is our Linux expert. His name is Larry Bushy, and Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, and thanks for having me here again. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Linux, and Ben came up with a really good suggestion that we thought we would talk a little bit about, and that is over the weekend, his brother, Aaron, who has a really nice PC with a solid-state hard drive, and it's a really good modern processor, lots of memory. I think about a terabyte of hard drive space. I mean, it's a nicely tricked out computer, which he built himself, which is very cool. And it was a learning experience for him as well as myself, and watching him do it. And evidently his hard drive failed over the weekend. And on his hard drive is the Windows operating system. It just would not boot up. In other words, it would cause his whole computer to hang. Now, fortunately, he got all of his components from Egghead, and I'm fairly assured. Newegg. What is the matter with me? He got it from Newegg. Yes, exactly. Fortunately, got it from Newegg, and I'm confident that he'll be able to get that swapped out, and he'll get a new one, and reinstall the Windows operating system. But over the weekend, he would have been without a computer. And so I don't know if Ben suggested it or it came to him. Was it your suggestion, Ben, or was it Aaron's idea to do this?
To run Linux?
Yes.
Oh, that was Aaron. He's been meaning to do it for a while now.
All right. So that was a great motivation. He said, okay, well, since I don't have Windows anymore and I'm going to be down without something, he went ahead.
I actually think the whole crashing thing was because he was doing Linux.
Really?
Well, I'm not saying Linux crashes your solid state or anything like that.
That's kind of what it sounded like.
There. Yeah, it did.
He did the most botched, OS installation I've ever seen. And I think so many times just, putting it back up, trying to figure out everything. He had a Linux Mint 12, and apparently that was way too unstable for him. So he had to go back to Linux Mint 11. And, before he did that, he was rebooting it, five times, it seemed like five times a minute. And if the solid state just finally gave up the ghost.
I would tend to disagree because I don't care how many times you try to reboot Windows, you can do it over and over. And the point is it's not going to wear it out. I mean,
thing with Linux as well. Yeah. Like normally you don't have to reboot Linux at all, and the fact that this thing was rebooting and rebooting kind of tells me that maybe the hard drive was failing all along.
Yeah, and finally the system won't even come. Now he puts it in, and if the hard drive, the solid state hard drive is connected, the computer won't even turn on. So that to me says no, that's not a fault of Linux. That's just basically it was dying. And he's going to get that replaced. But in the meantime, he went ahead with Linux Mint.
A more satisfying story for me. Aaron did something horribly wrong and killed his hardware.
Okay, he said to make sure that Ben doesn't beat out up on him too strongly tonight, you know, and to stick up for him. So I'm going to try to help him out.
I guess the moral of Aaron's, you know, crazy Linux Mint story is you have to read the instructions on how to do it.
You know,
and probably stick with, you know, kind of the more stable operating systems of Linux.
You're a witness to this, Larry. Ben actually said, read the instructions. This is coming from never read a single instruction in his entire life. We're going to come back and look at this more closely. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. I just want to let you know that Larry is having some technical issues with Skype. He was on and everything was working fine, and all of a sudden the audio went away. And so I have, at this moment, Ben, I'm trying to...
Is the mic muted?
No. He lost the audio. So he is actually logged off. He's restarting Skype as we speak. So the moment I see him back on to Skype, this actually happened before the show started. He thought he was on, and Skype said no, he's not there, and so I couldn't set up a link to him. Now I just see he's back on, so I'm going to call him back and see if we can get him back on and see if this works.
This is when technology thinks it knows better than you do.
There he is. Larry, are you back?
I'm back. I think the Microsoft takeover of Skype has conflicted with the Linux operating system that I'm using.
Oh, gosh.
They don't get along with one another anymore.
Well, did you do anything to cause that to happen? And if you did, don't do that thing again.
Yeah, I wish I knew. It just all of a sudden, during the commercial, it just suddenly... Nothing. Wow. Silence.
Wow.
I knew it was wrong at that point.
Yeah. Well, at least we know how to fix it. Basically, just get out of it and start it again. Or you might want to go to a different version of Linux or something.
Yeah, I think a different version of Skype.
Do you have a different version of that too? Or?
I could go to an older version or something like that.
Okay. Well, if it happens again, then we'll do a little tap dance while you
start
and then just get another. Or maybe while we're talking here, you can find that other copy of Skype and have it ready in the wings just in case. So. So we can do that. But in the meantime, we were talking to you about my son Aaron and his experiences with his with Linux, because his version of Windows evidently is resident on a solid state hard drive which died, and over the weekend, and so he took it upon himself to get a copy of Linux, download it, install it. Now,
that's where we're having the issue here. It's the chronological order. The timeline of this whole incident, it's kind of messed up. He was bored one night. You know, maybe he just played too much World of Warcraft and he was bored with video games and everything. And he said, you know what? I'm gonna make a partition, and I'm gonna get Linux Mint 12 on my computer.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing all this stuff, you know, mess with it. And then about 12 hours later, you know, him still being up and his solid state just gave up the ghost.
Well, why would he mess? First of all, it doesn't take 12 hours to install Linux Mint.
Oh, Aaron has a way.
He should definitely have read the instructions.
Well, and that was the point, and that was the thing, because, you know, Ben, every time I get Ben something new, I get him a piece of hardware. I don't care if it's a cooking appliance, if it's a radio, it's something for his computer, a new laptop. I say, Ben, read the instructions. And he looks at me like I'm an alien. He says, why do I want to do that? And I say...
Because they're like matchsticks. You rub them together with everything else, and it works.
You know, and you need to read the instructions on how things work. And so for him to sit here and say now, well, he should have read the instructions, you don't know how bizarre and how out of character that is for him, you know.
The instructions for Linux aren't really all that hard. Insert CD, boot, enter your username, your password, next, 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 reboot, done.
Wow. Wow. That's simple, you know?
Yeah.
But now, so I'm wondering.
Well, wait, you know, it seems like, you know, 12 hours to install Linux is a long time. Let me clarify this. You know, he's sitting in the next room, and I want to, you know, kind of be on his side. He installed Linux probably about a dozen times.
There you go.
You know, so between 12 and the failing hard drive and the having to go back to, you know, Linux Mint 11, he installed it multiple times.
Well, I have a couple of questions, first of all. My first question is if Windows wasn't working, how could he go online to get that and download
Linux? He has this little he just got done with college. He might go back for graduate work, whatever, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But he has this little Windows computer that he uses to take notes in class on.
That's right, a little tablet. It's a little
Well, it's kind of like one of those little
Keyboard. Yeah,
the screen flips around and you can write on it.
It's an EPC. It's just one of the smaller ones.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's really small, but it's powerful enough for him to take his, you know, his little jump drive, plug it into the side, and actually, you know, kind of get the file he needs.
All right, so he was able to download it on the other computer and then bring it over and put it onto a USB drive, a flash drive, and insert it into the computer.
Yeah, like he had Linux Mint installed on his hard drive, and he was booting from a solid state and everything. Anyways, the Linux wasn't doing it right or something, or he didn't do it right. And so he tried to get back on Windows, and his solid state crashed. So his whole setup had no operating system for a good, probably 6 hours.
So he physically removed this solid state drive, because I know it's, I see it sitting on his table, and just took unplugged.
Yeah, I think he's using it as a coaster now.
Yeah, well we
not,
are
never a wise.
Yeah, egg. No, he's going to. We are going to return it to Newegg, so we have all that. And then my point is now, so he was able to, from a flash drive or jump drive, he was able to take the copy of Linux, put it into there, and basically start up from that stick and install a copy of Linux to a partition that either he had already made or he made fresh from the partition. I guess my question to Larry is, what do you think might have gone wrong? Well, first of all, he says that Linux Mint 12 was not the one. There were some things wrong with it, so he went back to 11. What was he talking about, Larry?
Yeah. Well, Linux Mint 12 is, in many ways, a brand new version of Linux Mint for a number of reasons. First of all, they went to the new Linux version 3 of the kernel is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And that's brand new. That should actually have given him more hardware support, but they also had updated the entire desktop environment from GNOME 2 to GNOME 3. So it's quite possible there was some incompatibility with his hardware.
Okay. Well, all right, listen, we're obviously going to continue on. We're just getting started. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight, 866-606-TALK. If you want to give us a call, we'll be right back.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. We have Larry Bushy with us for our Going Linux show. And, you know, I'm trying to get Aaron to come in here and explain to me exactly, you know, what kind of went wrong. But I think he's a little embarrassed, so he won't, he won't come in.
He's on national broadcast radio and say how he screwed it up.
So what have you?
We've all done it. Yeah, we've all done it.
And we're going to talk more about it, but I just want to say, to cap it all off, he finally got it working, you know, after, you know, killing one, or, okay, fine. Okay, his hard drive just crashed. Don't worry about it. Okay, but after all of this, he looks at me and goes, "So, you want me to install Linux Mint on your computer?"
Just build that confidence.
Right, and then he took his run screaming back into his room, cringing and
hiding his computer. I'm like, "You're kidding, right?" And he's like, "No, I think I got a pretty good hang of this now."
I learned on this machine.
Yeah, I learned on this
machine. Not so bad once you do it twice.
Right. I might kill your hard drive.
It's like performing surgery on yourself and you lose an arm and they say, "It's okay. I got it now. All the kinks are worked out."
So I take it you said no to him. But
I said no. I'm not opposed to Linux. I'm just opposed to Aaron doing Linux.
Okay. Now, have you installed a copy of Linux on your computer, Ben?
Oh, I am in the baby steps of what he just went through. So okay. Hopefully my experience will go better.
But you know, because as Larry said, it's like you don't even have to read the instructions, which is what I mean. It's what, six steps and it's done, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah. haven't you been threatening to do that for like 2 months now?
Yeah.
Oh, longer than that.
More, 3 months?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
Now,
it's on my to-do list, and the to-do list just gets longer, so.
Well, and it stays at the bottom, I bet, too, right?
Now, I have to say, Larry.
It got moved down after this whole, this whole thing.
I have to say, though, I mean, both my kids are really, really bright and know what they're doing. And I watched Aaron. Well, he's using Linux now, like he uses Windows. And I said, so how long did it take to get used to it? He says, there's still a few differences, but it's really – I mean, he's doing everything. I mean, he's downloading – he's playing MP3 files, he's doing, everything he was doing before on Windows, he is now doing on his computer. And I said to him, I said, so do you think, when you get the solid-state drive back, you'll put Windows back on? And he said, maybe. He might not even put Windows back on. Now that he's used it and he's using it productively and doing everything and anything that he wants to on this I mean, it looks great. When you look at Linux Mint running, and he's learned to use it, and in the short time that he's had it, I mean, he's very proficient at it. He can do anything and everything. I've asked him to do some rather exotic, things for me, and on his computer, and no problem. I mean, he's got it down.
Well, and you'll find that many people end up on Linux for exactly the same reason. Either
something died,
has crashed and Windows died, or they got a very bad virus infection for about the 20th time and they're just fed up, and they've decided to give Linux a try, or been forced to give Linux a try because their Windows partition is down or whatever, and they get started on it and they get proficient with it very quickly and find that they're not really feeling like a fish out of water. They take to it quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And many of the Linux distributions, especially Linux Mint, are designed for that. They're designed to be very familiar to people who are moving over from Windows, and especially Mint 11 is the older desktop environment, which was specifically designed not for Windows users, but to make Windows users feel comfortable is probably a better way to put it. And even with Linux Mint 12, they've done what they can to preserve that, given that they're working with a whole different user interface. And Linux Mint is one of those distributions that is very, very newbie-friendly. So I'm not surprised that he's picked up on it quickly.
And it's interesting because if for a first-time Linux user, but someone who's, let's say, who's proficient at Windows, who really knows what they're doing and everything, and then would you recommend Mint just for an everyday, all-around kind of a version of Linux OS?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
it is as powerful as the most complex and complicated distribution of Linux out there.
Oh, there you go.
Linux is Linux. All of the software that you can install on the most complicated version of Linux out there, you can install on Linux Mint as well. So you're not giving up anything. In fact, what you're gaining is the simplicity and the ease of use. And for day-to-day use, I don't know about you, but I want something that's simple and easy to use.
Yeah.
If I want to experiment around with something like Linux for Scratch that comes to you not on a CD but in a book, you literally build it from scratch. That would be the ultimate challenge,
right?
And that would not be my day-to-day
operating system. And he wasn't looking for a challenge. He was just learning to get up and running as fast.
Yeah, just so he could use his computer.
Right,
yes.
Just use it. He wanted us to use his computer, but he uses his computer in fairly sophisticated ways, albeit easy, but yet different.
I think it really spoke to his kind of, he's more of a free software kind of guy, and with Windows you're a criminal, and with Linux you're a Linux user.
Well, he has a legitimate version of Windows, but still the.
But I mean, you know, like the programs they downloaded for Windows is, you know, hundreds of dollars, and he felt, you know,
oh,
I can get it for free. And right. Linux, mm-hmm. you know, has their own little database, and I know you can charge for some, but most of them are free.
I will agree with Ben. Aaron likes to free stuff. I mean, he likes to use things for free, and why not do it legitimately? And that's what he's doing. So everything he has on there now, he's downloaded. It's free, and I mean, he's you know, uploading and, I mean, downloading music files, videos. I mean, he's on all kinds of streams. He's accessing databases that he uses for school. I mean, but he's doing it all with Linux, and it all works fine. So he seems to be happy with it. And so far, he's not pressed. I've got to get this hard drive fixed so I can get Windows up and running. There's no sense of urgency. I mean, he's doing everything he wants to. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's why Linux is becoming more and more popular, because you can do just that. You can do anything that you can do on Windows or Mac on a Linux machine, except spend a lot of money.
And I neglected to say, he's also likes playing lots of games, and he's playing all the games that he played with.
Yeah.
He's playing on Linux. What are some of the games he's playing, Ben?
He's playing some turn-based little castle game where you move little guys around, you attack, and it has like the graphics of like, say, Warcraft 2 from like 1996 or something.
But he likes that.
He's addicted to it.
Yeah, and he's playing it again. Now that game was originally designed for a Windows system, right? But he was running it on Linux, unless you look at it, you wouldn't looking at the game, you can't tell because it's a full screen, right. So you have no idea. But when he goes
Before
back to the OS,
I just really want to say this. You know what Aaron enjoys most is going out and Googling a problem, and he told me that he enjoyed, you know. There are a lot of forum posts. There's a lot of, you know, kind of communities out there to help you with Linux. And, you know, and especially for Windows, if you go out there and you Google your problem, you'll find something, but it's more like, you know, a non-tech-savvy person talking with an incredibly tech-savvy person. And it's like they're talking two different languages, and they go, you know, days and weeks without actually resolving any issues. With Linux, it seems like everyone knows what they're doing, and he can find, you know, pretty much anywhere his problem, and they have it solved pretty immediately, you know, on the same post.
Now the other thing, and also again, Aaron has an academic background. He's working. I mean, he's going to be going for his PhD in chemistry, but he comes from the college background, college environment, and everything is working. I mean, so that's not to say you need to have a college background to use it. I'm just saying that
you don't need a college education to use it well. I mean, he uses it terribly.
I he's doing really well. I think that's not. Now, were there anything else that was that he's doing? I noticed he's playing games with it, and he's doing all the things.
What the kid needs is his own internet connection, because he's been downloading like a fiend.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things you'll notice with Linux, because everything's there in the repositories. It's so easy just to download something and try it, and if you don't like it, uninstall it and download the next one. And there are different versions of everything that you would want to try, each with different features or a little different spin on how they think the software should actually work. And you can usually find something that's of interest to you, and then a few other varieties that kind of pique your interest as well.
And we have a kind of rule here in the Crossman household is that when we're on the air, he can't be downloading anything, because we need every bit we can get when we're doing the show. So hopefully he's not on, but during that, he's playing games or doing other things. So, hey, listen, we got to take another break. We'll continue on. It's our All Linux show tonight, 866-606-8255. We'll be right back. Fifty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America show. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and that means it's all about the subject of Linux. It is a very important operating system, and we dedicate the complete show every month to the subject of Linux. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us, and we're talking now. we decided to go a little bit off a different subject. We're going to save the topic of podcasting probably for the next month, Larry. We'll just do that because I think that's
sounds fine.
It is an interesting. But in the meantime, we've been talking about my son Aaron, who has just graduated college in the chemistry department, and is going to be going to graduate school, hopefully Harvard. I know that's one of these he's applied.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like Craig's kind of, you know, gloating about Aaron having a degree in chemistry and yada yada. The thing is, that's his only claim to fame right now.
Well, that's all you need, right? that's pretty good.
Come on, Craig, you know, I need to put him down.
I see.
It's my job.
Yeah, I see. Okay. But you know, his mom says, if there's, because he's got to apply to UNC Chapel Hill, and he's got University of Berkeley. I mean, he's got a number of them that he's submitted applications to, but he says, well. But his mother is of the mindset, if Harvard accepts him, that's it. There's no choice. That's it. Boom. He has no say in the matter. He says, I'm going to be going around, you know, hi, how are you today? Oh, did you know my son goes to Harvard? You know, or you're to the supermarket, you know, can you have change of, you know, $5? Oh, by the way, my son goes to Harvard. You know, every other sentence could be my son goes to Harvard. So that's, I guess, one of her things in life. That's what she wants to be able to say that. So I don't think he'll have any choice. He gets accepted to that. He's going, and that's it.
Well, and now she can say, and my son goes to Harvard, and he uses installed Linux.
And he uses Linux. He installed Linux, exactly. but there you go. So, yeah. And of course, he'll be using the, Linux in his graduate work, too, in chemistry, I'm sure. All the different things that they have will be available. I mean, Linux is extremely popular in the world of academia, is it not?
Yeah, it is, especially in those labs and so on that have used Unix in the past to do some of their number crunching and, you know, anything to deal with research. Unix and Linux have become kind of the standard, and there are a lot of software packages out there that are designed specifically for academia. There's, in fact, an entire distribution called Scientific Linux that... Yeah. As you can imagine, comes with a lot of scientific packages already pre-installed, and it's designed for someone with a scientific bent to either, you know, their profession or their hobby.
There you go. Well, so that's it. Yes, you're right, and it makes perfect sense. So, and I have a feeling, I really do have a feeling that now that he has it up and running, he's comfortable with it, and I don't think he'll be using Windows again, unless for some reason, you know, it's mandated that he must use Windows.
One of the first things he learned when he got in there was the whole the emulator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Windows environment, so you know, pretty much the only thing he does on Windows, which is kind of his gaming, he already, you know, that was the first thing he figured out.
Yeah, because he couldn't do without the games, right?
Right.
So he did that.
And Wine is what you're talking about, and it's the acronym Wine stands for Wine is not an emulator because it's not, but it allows you to run Windows programs inside of Linux, so you never have to you don't actually have to shut down Linux and reboot into Windows to be able to run your games on Linux.
Now, do you need a copy of Windows to use Wine? Or?
No, that's the great thing about it is it's unlike a virtual machine or even a dual boot situation where if you want to install it, you actually have to have a licensed copy of Windows to use it. Mm-hmm. Wine is just... some software that sits it's actually some amazing software that sits between Linux and the Windows game. And what it does is when the game says, okay, go do this, the game thinks it's talking to Windows, and Wine translates that command into what Linux expects and then returns the result to the game as though it were coming from Windows. So it's kind of a translation software in between the two.
I understand we have on Skype, we have a caller. Hi, who are we talking to? Hello, on Skype. Hi, how are you? What's your name?
Yeah, my name is Charlie.
Hey, Charlie, how are you? Welcome to the Computer America show. We've got Larry Bushy here.
I've been trying to get you guys on your other phone number.
He wants to know how to update. I'll tell you what. Listen, we're coming up at the top of the hour break. I'm going to offer you the option. I'm going to disconnect you from Skype. I just checked them. They said that the 866-606-8255 number is working. So why don't you call back on that number, and he'll let me know, and then we'll pick you up on the other side of the hour. Okay, Charlie?
And that sounds real good.
And then we will continue to help you with your updating on Mint, okay? All right.
I appreciate it, guys.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on here with our All Linux Show. It is all about the subject of Linux, and we have Larry Bushy here with us talking about it. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and we were talking to Charlie, but evidently for some reason he's not calling us back, and we'll just have to wait for him to do so. So when we do, we'll help him, or we'll try to help him. Let's see if he calls us back. In the meantime, I just want to mention before we get back that for those of you who use Wikipedia and some of these online services, they're going dark. Actually, it's happening in less than 2 hours.
Got Charlie.
Okay, good enough. We got Charlie. I've just been told, so we'll bring him on momentarily. But in protest to something called SOPA, and also PIPA, I guess you would pronounce that PIPA. the English language version of Wikipedia. Now, I guess all the other language versions will probably be up because they're just saying it's just going to block out the English language version, probably because this only happens in the United States, and so that's probably why they're doing it. So, they're going to begin at 5 o'clock Universal UTC. Tomorrow, they're going to black out as a protest against proposed legislation in the U.S. to the Stop Online Piracy Act. That's SOAP in the U.S. House of Representatives, and the Protect IP Act, which is PIPA in the U.S. Senate. That, if passed, would, according to them, seriously damage the free and open internet, including services such as Wikipedia. And I mean, this is the first time that the English Wikipedia has ever staged a public protest of this nature, and it is a decision that wasn't, you know, lightly made, according to this article here. So tomorrow we will talk more about it. I know Ben has been talking about it for some time and wanted to.
And just I just want to say before we, you know, kind of do everything, if you receive a 503 error tomorrow,
yes,
that means or that's the general, you know, kind of protest. You know, they aren't saying, you know, they aren't just bringing it down. When you type in or you find it, it'll say 503 error, and you won't be able to see anything.
So it's not a 404 error, it's a 503 error.
Yeah, it's a 503.
Okay, so, all right, there you go. were you aware of this, Larry, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, I am aware of it, and I think we should start an additional protest for Stop Misleading Named Legislation, SMNL.
Okay.
You know, okay. This is an example of one of those pieces of legislation that has a name that everyone can get behind, mm-hmm. that is, oh, we've got to stop piracy. But the actual terms of the legislation, I'm not going to say this one does nothing to stop online piracy, but it is just so misleading, and I don't want to get into a political argument here, right. But, you know, go look up SOPA. Look on the Wikipedia page if you don't have anywhere else to look, and it has a lot of information, pros and cons, on the Wikipedia page on SOPA. I was looking at it this morning, as a matter of fact, and it does a fairly
pros?
Good job of presenting both sides of the issue.
They did find some pros in there. Okay,
yes, they tried to present both sides of the argument, yeah. Fairly, and I think they have.
Okay. Some people are worrying is that, you know, if this thing gets passed, that services like Google and Wikipedia will just basically take their marbles and take it out to Canada or to Mexico or someplace outside the United States and just continue to do their operations there, and because then, you know, it's harder to enforce laws there, these things, and then all the people who are employed, they'll probably take the top people with them, and then everybody else is basically going to have to fall by the wayside, and it's all the money that people are making here in the U.S. it'll just be taken outside the U.S. So,
well, there's that, and there's a lot of unintended consequences to this kind of legislation. For example, one of the things that it talks about in the legislation is that if your website has a link to another website that has a link to infringing material, your website can be
responsible.
Taken down.
Yeah.
In order to protect myself, what I would have to do is every link on the website I would leave on the website, you know, the www and so on, but I wouldn't put the link tag in there, so it wouldn't actually be a link.
Yeah, they'd have to plug it in.
And I would, and I hand code my HTML on my site. Can you imagine how long it would take for me to do that just to ensure that I'm not linking to something that doesn't infringe?
That really is, you know, I don't think it's going to pass. I think it'll be modified. That they're going to, hopefully some semblance of reason will be applied, and it'll be modified so sites such as yours aren't held liable. I'm sure there'll be some sort of compromise. Come up. It's not going to be one way, all the way one or all the way the other. I think that some sort of compromise will be reached, and because they have until March to get things to look at it. So we'll just have to wait and see, you know.
Yeah, like everything else in the government appears to be these days, let's just push it out a few months. Yeah. Maybe they'll forget about it.
Anyway, we have Charlie on the phone. He called last hour. He had a Linux question for him, and he was talking about upgrading his version of Linux to the later version. Charlie, you still there with us?
I'm still here, guys.
Okay, good.
That's great.
All right, so where were we?
Well, what the question I had, guys, is when Larry sent me the old version of Ubuntu 9.10, when I reinstalled it, it automatically reinstalled it to the latest one, 10.04. But when I reinstalled this that Larry sent me, Mint 8, it didn't do that, and I tried to update or anything, and there's no way, I don't know how to get to the latest version of Mint 8.
Yeah, so Linux Mint is based, most of the Linux Mint versions are based on Ubuntu, The difference between the Linux Mint team, the team of people that puts Linux Mint together, and the team of people that puts Ubuntu together, is that Ubuntu has a huge corporation behind it, and the Linux Mint team is run by a handful of, they're not all volunteers now, but a handful of enthusiasts. And what they have done is they've added a lot of features to Ubuntu that you have to go and install yourself if you have Ubuntu, like media codecs and things like that to help you play MP3 files or to play DVDs even on your computer. So the Linux Mint team has done that. They've added some utilities. They developed their own utilities, but they're a very small team. So getting back to the topic of upgrading, the Ubuntu folks have put a great deal of effort into ensuring that when you install one version of Ubuntu, you can upgrade to the next version without having to download another ISO file and creating a new CD or DVD so that you can do the installation. You can just upgrade it right from the same application that you use to install software. You just install the upgrade. With Linux Mint, though, like I said, it is a small team, and as a result, they haven't got the same time or resources behind them to put into that upgrade thing. So what they do is they recommend that if you want to upgrade to the next version of Linux Mint, that you install from scratch, or at least they have been recommending that in the past. Now, in this latest version of Linux Mint, and the latest CD or DVD that you can download, you can install it, or you can put it into the CD drive, and it will offer to upgrade for you if you already have Linux Mint in there. But you do have to download the latest version from the Linux Mint website, And then you can go ahead and insert it into your CD drive, and it will ask you, do you want to upgrade? And you can upgrade from there. Or if you really want to, you can install from scratch. And what I'm going to do, Charlie, is in our show notes and also in the chat room, I know you're in the chat room as well, I'm going to put a link to an article that I have on the Going Linux website on how to install Linux. Mint 11 is the example I've got here, but the same sort of thing applies to Linux Mint 12.
All right, Charlie, hopefully that helps, and you know, give us a call back next month. Let me know how things are going for you, okay?
Is there any chance I could ask one more question, or is it
we've got emails we've got to do, Charlie, and
chat room's always free.
Your chat room's always free. Ask your question in the chat room, okay?
Real good.
All right, take care. This is Computer America. We'll be right back. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Our mission here, of course, is to help as many people as we can on Linux. But we also have others who have written emails. And I know Charlie is in the chat room now and getting help there. And I'm glad that we can help you, Charlie. Certainly, you're welcome to call us back next month if you have another question. But I want to get to some of the emails with Larry Bushy. Larry, I have a question here. This was sent to us from Richard in Florida, who has a question for you. He says, hello. He says, is it possible to bring commands such as cat, grep, top, etc., to Windows CMD? That's what he wants to know. Yeah.
Okay, so what he's talking about there in English is he wants to use some Linux commands on Windows, in the command line in Windows, and the, what do they call it, the command prompt?
Yes.
From
the old, it gave you the old C prompt, you know, from...
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it, exactly. So, for example... In order to list the files in a directory or a folder in Linux, you
cat.
Type the command ls.
Well, I thought it was cat.
ls for list. Uh-huh. And in Windows, you type dir for directory.
Oh, that's true. Yes, yeah.
So they're equivalent commands.
Yeah. Now, on the old Apple II, it was cat. That's why I thought it was.
Ah, okay. All
right. Short for catalog. Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. Being not a Mac guy, I didn't know that. But
It was before Mac. It was Apple II.
There you go. Yeah. That's right. It was pre-Mac.
That's right. It was.
So in answer to the question, yes, you can do that, but it might be more trouble than it's worth. You can install a program called Cygwin, and you spell that Cygwin. And what that does is it installs essentially a Linux command environment inside the Windows shell, if you will, and it allows you to actually run a Unix, your Unix-like commands inside of Windows. It's actually a full Unix or Linux environment in there, but it does take some technical know-how. At least the last time I installed it, which was quite a while ago, so it may have improved, but I don't think so. I haven't heard a lot of development in Cygwin. But that's what a lot of Linux and Unix experts use to keep their Unix fix going as they're having to use their Windows machines at work, especially servers and so on. So there is a way to do it, but it's not pretty.
There you go. Not elegant.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Richard in Florida wanted to know that, so hopefully that you can do it, but it's not going to be an easy way to do it.
Yeah, just Google Cygwin. You'll find lots of stuff. It's been around for years and years.
All right. So now, also, you have some emails that were sent to you. And
I do.
The first one is from Chris, and it's about playing with Linux and iTunes.
Okay. Yeah. Right. So Chris writes, I switched to Linux about a year ago and loved it. I am only 15, soon to be 16, and a nerd slash biker. Well, 15 or 16, does that mean motorcycle or bicycle?
A little knobby tire.
Either way.
A little bicycle. Yeah.
Dirt bike. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm currently using Linux Mint 12. We've heard about that.
Yeah.
And have had minor problems such as notification and certain other items words don't show. And I think he gets a little clearer as to what he means a little bit later in the email. I didn't have this problem running Ubuntu, even if Mint is based on Linux. I think he means Mint is based on Ubuntu.
Yeah.
When I ran 10.04, which is Ubuntu 10.04, on my computer, it had the words on the top bar not showing up sometimes during boot. I think what he's talking about is the menu across the top. Like Windows has a start button with a menu on there. Linux, Ubuntu Linux has a top menu bar with a drop down, and some of the menu actually spreads along that bar across the top. So I think he's missing some of those menus there. This was my only reason switching to Ubuntu 11.04. When I got there, I didn't like the Unity interface, but that's why Ubuntu hasn't recovered. On DistroWatch, Mint seems to be topping it at this point. I seem to stick with Debian-based Linux distributions. They seem to have the packages that I use daily, like Skype. I'm currently thinking of switching my computer to Debian 6.0 due to its major stability that Mint and Ubuntu don't seem to provide me. I forgot to throw in, when I was running Ubuntu 12.04, it was horrible on my computer. It's a 1.6 gigahertz Intel Celeron with 1.9 gigabytes of RAM, nothing special, but it runs all the... I have dual booted it on.
Okay.
Maybe operating systems.
OS, I have dual booted it.
I hope Ubuntu dumps Unity, because if they don't, something better they will. If they don't get something better, they will continue to drop in popularity. I own an iPod Touch, fourth generation, running 5.0.1, not jailbroken for now. I have not found a good application that can recognize my iPod and remove pictures and videos and add music and your great podcast to my Linux computer. I think he means move, not remove. Do you think Linux will ever go completely mainstream? I think the only thing holding it back is the lack of graphical user interface and still using command prompt. I will be proud of Linux when the command prompt is rarely needed, and to install something you don't have to go to the shell, but just use a deb package. Well, Chris, I think you may have some misconceptions about Linux, even though you've been using it for about a year. You may have fallen into the routine of when somebody in a forum gives you help and they say, go to the command line and type this. The reason they're doing that is because from Linux distribution to Linux distribution, the graphical user interface is different, but the command line is exactly the same. So when you get help in a forum, they will tell you to install stuff using the command line. You certainly don't need to use the command line for very much in Linux at all anymore. So you can install any package you want. In fact, the deb package, it's called the deb package in Debian distributions because it ends in .deb. That's the file name. In Ubuntu and Linux Mint, all you have to do is double-click on that file in the file manager, and it will install, just the same way as double-clicking on an .exe file in Microsoft Windows installs the package, except that a .deb file is much less likely to contain a virus. But having said that, the iPod Touch, there are some programs out there that allow you to move and manage your music and videos and so on. The media players that come with your Linux distribution, like Banshee or Rhythmbox or whatever, are typically very good iTunes replacements. So take a look at those.
All right. We're going to take another break, and we're going to continue to your emails and questions. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. If you have a question about Linux, we will continue on with Larry Bushy right after these words. You're listening to Computer America. There you go. So we're doing emails now with Larry Bushy. He's the host and creator of the Going Linux podcast. And we just finished helping Chris. We helped Charlie on the phone. And so we're going to continue on with emails. We also helped Richard in Florida. So this is from James, who has a really interesting, weird name. It's just R3AV3R. So I just call him James. He has a question for you. So why don't you go ahead and continue on?
Okay, and I think that's probably a gamer handle or something, or yeah, maybe just a
well,
chat
Ben
room name.
Is that a gamer handle, Ben?
It looks like one. It's Reaver.
Reaver. Oh, it's yep. Leet. Oh, yeah, Leet. The three is an E,
yeah,
so yeah.
Definitely Leet, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So Reaver, let's call him James, asked he had actually emailed a couple of times asking us how to convert his AVI files, which is a video file format, to DVD format so that he could play those DVDs on a regular old DVD player. I don't know if it was old, but a regular DVD player. And he, after those emails, we had made a couple of recommendations as to which Linux packages he could use. And he was actually looking around at different distributions of Linux, looking for one that would mm-hmm. do it. And he really didn't have to do that. He just had to find the right DVD authoring package. So here's his email. He said, "Hi, Tom and Larry, I just had to send this to you guys. And thank you so much for finally cutting the last strings holding me to that horrible W word in my personal life, Windows. I still must use it for work, but that's nothing compared to my personal life. I tried DVD Styler, DVD, and then the word Styler, all one word. That's one of the packages we had recommended. And it crashed when it went to convert an AVI to a DVD. So I tried DVD, and this one you spell D-E-V-E-D-E. That's how you spell the name of the software package. Mm-hmm. So he tried DVD, half expecting the same results, and holy penguins, it works. Mm-hmm. I am using 64-bit, and it pegs one of the four CPUs at 100%, but it works. Linux all the way. Had to say thanks, and I'm glad I found your podcast."
You know, when he said he was talking about that horrible W word in his personal life, I thought he meant work. But
yeah.
that wasn't that.
Well, there's a running gag between my co-host Tom and myself that we don't say Windows. We just call it that other operating system or the W word.
Or that operating system that shall go be nameless. It could be that.
Yeah. But we could do that.
All right. Another Richard. Okay. He's a fellow podcaster, has a few questions for you.
Yes. And this one may take a little while because he's got, what is it, 7 or 8 questions, and one could be a little while to answer.
Well,
so let's just get through them.
Do you want to do
time,
that, or do you want to do some of the shorter ones? Because
You know what? Let's go through Richard's, and if we don't get finished, that's fine. We'll either pick it up next month, or we'll pick it up on the podcast.
Fair enough. You know. Okay, go for it.
So Richard is a fellow podcaster. He's also a fellow Canadian, and he has, as I said in the notes here, he's got a few questions. He says, "Hi, Larry. Here are some things that I have always wanted to know the answers to. One, I hear a lot about OGCamp." That's OGG space CAMP. What is an OGCamp?
It's a camp for OGs.
Yeah, there you go. Is that similar to a bar camp? The WordPress people have meetups once in a while. Are they called bar camp? What about other types of meetups? How are you supposed to know what it is all about when they keep using code names? Okay, so let's start with OGCamp. OGCamp, OG, first of all, is
codec.
A codec where you can record. It's an alternative to
MP3. Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
And it's a free, as opposed to trademark or copyright encumbered like MP3 is. Mm-hmm. So it's a free codec. So OGCamp was first, as far as I know, was first introduced by a couple of British podcasts. They decided, hey, we should have a conference, an unconference for our listeners. And so those two podcasts, one of which is the Linux Outlaws podcast, and the other one is the Ubuntu UK podcast. Uh-huh. Can you tell that these are Linux podcasts?
Yep.
They organized the very first Aug Camp, and this year they have Aug Camp 11.
Wow.
So they've been doing it for a while
years,
now.
Yeah.
Wait, it's not 11 years. They're counting digitally.
Ah.
Binary. Okay.
That's
so they've completed their second one.
Second.
Wait a minute.
No. That's three.
Yeah. That's three, yes.
11 is
I'm
three.
I'm not good at binary. There are two kinds of people in the world. Those.
No, there are 10 kinds. There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll get it right. I can't even get the joke right. Anyway, moving along. So that's Aug Camp. Now, what the heck is Bar Camp? It's not a meeting that it's held in a bar.
Uh-huh.
It is a meeting. It's the bar part of it harkens back to something that's used in programmers and let's just leave it as programmers. FUBAR. When something is FUBAR'd, all messed up,
yes,
right?
It is. Yes,
so
it is.
Programmers use the word foo and the word bar to represent variables in general. And so as an alternative to the foo camp, and there is a foo camp, which is an invitation-only conference for – it's actually the foo there stands for Friends of O'Reilly – they decided that they would have a non-invitation only, like open to the public conference, and they decided to call it Bar Camp to go along with the Foo Camp.
This is nothing like having to pass the bar when you become a lawyer.
No,
okay.
Not at all.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we'll continue on with the second part of Richard's seven-part email, which we may or may not get through. But we're here to help. It's all about Linux. We'll continue on. Stay with us. After the hour here on the Computer America Show, I said no spoilers in the chat room because Larry is in there as well. He's going to see Serenity. And we're talking about Richard's email. And we answered the first part about Aug and Camp and Bar Camp.
Yep.
And now number two is he has a question about Linus Torvalds.
Yes, he says, I understand Linus Torvalds wrote the Linux kernel. Is BSD version of Linux the exact same code, or did the Berkeley people write their own Unix-like kernel? Well, BSD is not a version of Linux. BSD is its own version of a Unix-based operating system. So they're both based in Unix, but they are very separate. Now, a lot of Linux applications will run on BSD and vice versa. They are very, very similar, but they are independently developed. Let's put it that way.
All right.
So number three is related to that. It's Apple has a Unix system under its Apple OS X. Is that version of Unix the same code as the Berkeley BSD code? Since the licensing of BSD is very liberal, they would be legally able to, quote, steal it for their own commercial use. Did they do that? Well, my understanding, and Craig, maybe with your understanding of Apple, you might be able to answer this in a little bit more depth. But my understanding is that Steve Jobs used the BSD kernel as the base platform for developing the next operating system
that's
in the
true.
Next computer, and
yes.
then that got ported over to Apple OS X, right?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm, that's very true.
So, yeah, so although Linux and BSD are developed independently of one another, Apple's OS X is built on the code, or at least part of the code, from BSD. So all three of them are based in Unix, but OS X is based on BSD. And you're quite right, Richard. The BSD license lets you do almost anything you want with their code. And so they didn't have to steal it. They could legally use it according to the terms of the license agreement.
Yep. And that's it. So,
very, yeah.
Uh-huh. Of course, heaven help you if you, heaven help you if you use any of Apple's OS 10. that is patented beyond reason.
Story.
Yes.
Yeah. So another related question, number four, in the Android phones, the version of Unix they seem to they use seems to be Linus Torvalds' kernel. Is that correct? Did Google use a distribution of Linux and port it to their phones? Well, Google, in developing the Android operating system, did use the Linux kernel, the one that Linus Torvalds developed. However, they did not use a Linux distribution. You might argue that Android itself is a distribution of Linux. So it's based on a Linux kernel, so it's got Linux at its heart, but the entire operating system of Android, its user interface, the way it interacts with hardware, is all Android. And so that's really what makes a distribution, is how does it interact with the user, how does it interact with the hardware, even though it's based on Linux.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Number five, let's see how many of these we can get done.
Yeah.
Do you know what languages most of the OS systems were written in? Did Linus Torvalds use C++ to write his kernel? How about Windows? Did Microsoft use C++ or C# to write Windows operating system? The answer to that question is, I don't know. I really don't know. I would think that C# was probably developed after Windows was developed, so it's unlikely they used that. C++, maybe when the
has
Microsoft
been credited to write a lot of things C++, and I believe a lot of the code is C++.
Yeah, a lot of different things.
But, you know, the beauty of C++ is because you can write it as a language. It's a more intelligent language, but you have the ability to do things at the assembly level that you would need something like an assembler to do.
Yes, exactly. So it's a high-level language.
High-level language. Thank you.
That's low-level calls, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So number six is, I have programmed in BASIC, assembly, and a few other languages years ago. So if I wanted to tinker around with a programming language now to do simple things, what would you recommend?
Well, if you get away with BASIC, I would say great, but it's probably going to be C++. That would be my guess, but you know.
Yeah, and like if you're on an open operating system like Linux, which I believe Richard is, you can actually use the Bash shell, which is a shell scripting language. Arguably, is it a programming language? I think so. I think a shell scripting language would qualify as a programming language. And to do something simple, that would work just fine.
Yeah.
If you want to get a little more complex, you can use BASIC. Or in the software world, you can use some of the other free software languages that are out there.
I really like BASIC. I miss BASIC. It was fun.
Yeah, it's still around. And they make a BASIC for cross-platform use.
Let's get seven real quick. We can make it. What is the Linux shell, and how do you program with that? Is the Linux shell a real programming language?
I think it is, and you do program with it. And if you, there are plenty of tutorials out there on it. In fact, we have a very mini tutorial on our website, but there are the much more extensive books written, CDs written, websites dedicated to Bash shell scripting.
All right, so we made it through the email, and we're flat out of time. Larry, I want to thank you so much for being here on our first, of your first show for the year, and look forward to seeing you in February on again the next third Tuesday of the month, and that'll be February the 21st. So
okay, look forward to it.
All right, listen, have a great month, and we'll catch you next time. Okay, Larry.
You bet.
Take care. Have a good evening. Good night.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.